And our special guest tonight, John Hogue and his prophecies, and we'll be back with more of those in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie, John Hogue with us. John, back to the Arab Spring, and if it can happen here in this country, what do you think, and if so, when?
There's a very important astrological aspects, several of them happening this year. In fact, this book, Predictions for 2012, is probably the most I've ever delved deeply into astrological prophecy in any of my almanacs. And one of the things you can look at starting in February and then surging forward and then finding itself stuck in a muddle in June through a little after the national elections in the United States is an aspect that's going to define us between this year all the way till the year 2026. It's the third long transiting planet that is going to define a generational age. And in mundane and predictive astrology that deals with predicting the future of nations rather than individuals and charts, this is the discipline that Nostradamus used extensively to bring structure to his cycles of history and future history and his prophecies. We are currently in a period where we have the return of Pluto since 2008 into Capricorn. What that means in layman's terms is Pluto, the most distant planet in astrology, defines the climate or the backdrop to the theater or the stage of a generational period. It's kind of, and since it's in Capricorn, it's dealing with structures, systemic structures, their failure, status quo, business, economy, and administration. The last time we were in this place was during the American Revolution, and during the time of the Age of Enlightenment, when Voltaire and Rousseau and Ben Franklin and a lot of other great thinkers and ideas, Thomas Paine, all started restructuring the way we look at ourselves. We started thinking about the pursuit of happiness, about free speech, about church and state being separate, about the idea of liberty as a concept that you could actually live and flow with. These were the things that came up in the Capricornian period. 248 years later,
here we are.
Here we are, and it's come back. And just like what happened in the last period in 1773, we had a tax rebellion, people in a Tea Party rebellion, which started the ball rolling on what will evolve in this year into an American Spring. Now, I have said, and I've caught a lot of ire from people in the Tea Party movement. I have many Tea Party movement readers in PokeProphecy.com. And I told them that just like the early Tea Party in the last Pluto cycle, we were, it was a more theatrical than substantial. It got our attention. Mm-hmm. And then more level-headed people got involved. People stopped wearing costumes, getting themselves painted up like Indians to throw boxes of tea into the Boston Harbor. And there was a certain quality of the festival, the theatrical, that was also involved in this group. And what then happened, though, is what became a very narrowly focused group became a spread to the general population of the 13 colonies of the United States to an extent that it eventually led to a popular, more embracive, expansive rebellion that ended up with the independence of the United States of America. Now, I see the same pattern developing again, and it's coming from the same source that this Pluto cycle also describes and defines. Back 250 some years ago, when Pluto was in Capricorn, you saw the emergence of the modern middle class as of today in Europe and in Britain and in America. And middle classes want more freedom from an aristocracy that had also crystallized.
And they deserve it.
Yeah. Now, We see now the current middle class in America and Europe are that same middle class, but they're going through a midlife crisis. But all around them is a global middle class awakening, especially going on in Asia, but also going on in the Middle East. And a lot of the people who pinpointed this surge of wanting more, of pushing back from the aristocracy, which now is not an aristocracy of blue bloods, but of bottom black lines. It's an aristocracy of corporate class that is trying to very slowly and inexorably hold its control over this growing middle class movement in the world. And it was just like what happened 250 years ago is happening again. And just like that, you will find that as the aristocracy pushes and suppresses, at a certain point, the people push back. And this is the year.
And they're pushing.
When the people push back, you're going to see not hundreds or thousands of people in the streets. You're going to see millions in the streets all over the world when the weather in the Northern Hemisphere goes into spring and summer. You're going to, what you see then, so Pluto I've defined. The other defining planet in this is Uranus. Uranus, in layman's terms, is the bringer of sudden change and innovation. So you have status quo Capricorn Pluto, who is now in a 90-degree square, which is an inharmonious aspect of friction between Uranus, which is the sign of chaos and revolution or innovation. So you have change versus status quo in a fight. And that starts in May and crystallizes in June, gets very intense through July, all the way into the national elections in the United States before it ends.
Good observation, John.
So what we have in that mix is in February, we have Neptune, the god of the oceans, returning to Pisces, the oceanic sign, symbolized by two fish. What that means in layman's terms is you have a little fish, which is your little small consciousness, little minnow on the surface, which has got a invisible rope that ties it to a big grouper, a big massive fish of the subconscious mind. This is the way ancients tried to describe what psychoanalysts would call the little one-tenth of the conscious mind.
Is this, is this the collective consciousness?
Yes.
Okay.
Or collective unconsciousness too. It's like the deep ocean of our unknown. We our personalities are the tip of the iceberg, if you want to use another metaphor. And then there's the whole vast iceberg beneath it we're not aware of, which is being moved by these very irrational times. This is another thing too. This will be one of the most irrational-driven years. That means very emotional. Gut reactions, the things you've just seen a little bit happen in the political campaigns of the Republican Party, the sudden unbelievable shifts of fortune. You know, first Romney wins Iowa, then they discover that he lost Iowa. He has a victory in New Hampshire, but then a complete reversal that would be hard to believe a week later or a week or so later in South Carolina. It could reverse again. This is very much the choppy, murky waters of this collective energy that's coming.
It's so bizarre, John.
It is very bizarre. In fact, it's going to the way, you know, we've been speaking the last 3 years about on these shows about another thing that's going on in the cosmos, which kind of relates to the cosmic calendar, which is the Sumerian concept that the great year that was really what created the 12 signs of the zodiac and the basis for astrology and astrological prophecy. And make a long story short, you can clock the beat of history in this 25,900-year-long cycle. That's the time it takes the vernal equinox from relation to Earth to very slowly change its position every year. I mean, that's why we change our calendars like the Gregorian, cut 10 days out so we could get kind of, so that December didn't become spring. And So it takes 25,000 years, almost 26,000 years for that to go all the way, creep all the way through the 12 signs of zodiac. And when it goes through a sign like Pisces, that's a cosmic month. It's 2,160 years roughly. The weeks are 500 years long. And you'll find that a lot of cycles of history follow these, the cosmic week. There are a lot of 500-year cycles. You get down to the 24-hour, if you will, cycle of one day with in an equinox, meaning equal positions of day and night. You've got 36 years of cosmic day, which is when history is slightly leaning, inclining towards more rational, yang, male-oriented motivations. And then there's 36 years of cosmic night, which is more yin, feminine, irrational, emotional ways of inclining history. We're, since 2008, in the cosmic night. And unlike the time when we had the American Revolution before, that was in cosmic day. And look at all the men and all the rationalists creating the U.S. Constitution. Well, now we're in cosmic night when this cycle returns, where America could have another revolution. And now we're driven more by emotional passions.
Do you feel, John, this year could have some major event, whatever it is, occur, and people are tapping into this? Because as I've been talking about for a year now on the program, people feel something very strange. I don't know what it is, and it's probably worse than better, but do you feel that?
It's that big Piscean fish that we can't see. It's that iceberg underneath the surface that we can't see. It's two things. The planet's in peril. The planet is trying to tell us that it's in peril. It's trying to get our attention by shifting the climate, shaking itself under our feet, rising its oceans to give us a bath. It's trying to tell us in its completely mindless but alive way that it's an organism and that we are sending it out of balance. The other thing that's happening, another alarm bell that should have been klaxoned to everybody on Halloween last year when we had the 7th billionth child born, we have aspirations for consuming resources and attaining wealth that, and I emphasize this, but the way we are going about it, not that we can't make everybody wealthy and have the bellies full and educated and all that, but just the way we're doing it now cannot sustain this large population. There's been some estimates that a high-energy, high-wasteful society that could be sustained on the Earth, like an American-style society, per capita use of energy and pollution creation, could be sustained by an Earth population of 2.5 billion people. Well, we just cleared 7. We're heading into the early 2020s or the mid-2020s to the 8th billion person. We are way beyond our sustainability right now. And there are so many prophecies from Nostradamus to the Bible to others that if you clean them off and take your clean your own glasses of cultural dogma and religious expectations, or take those rose-colored glasses off and actually look with your innocent intelligence at these prophecies without the Sunday school or the madrasa propaganda, you look at it like an innocent born-again child, and when you look at prophecy, you see that there are a lot of visions about our times, about global warming, about a climate shift coming, about a civilization that cannot sustain itself and may have to undergo a partial or complete collapse before by the 2020s and 2030s. Very soon, unless we really take seriously the things we need to do. But what are we doing? We are expelling more greenhouse gas now since the economic recession happened. Forward progress in alternative energies are slackening. We are 5 years away from tapping out our ability for the atmosphere to absorb our pollution without a runaway climate change. But we've got the Kyoto Protocol is going to vanish at the end of this year. You've got people talking about putting together another climate change symposium, maybe in the 2020s or 2020 itself. that might have some legally binding goals for countries to lower their carbon emissions. It's about 3-4 years too late. It's almost like all our leaders have become the new Neville Chamberlains, and climate change is the new Adolf Hitler that we've got to tame.
John, I want to get into 2012 with you in terms of December 21st, and also got to ask you about a possibility of war with Iran as well. Let's talk also about earthquake. Do you see any big ones for this year?
Well, I'm always concerned these days about the one quadrant of the Ring of Fire, the Pacific Ring of Fire, that has not been hit by a major quake like we have seen in the last several years. We've had the south. If you look at the Pacific Ocean in your mind's eye in a map, if you look to the lower southeastern quadrant, you had Chile hit by a major 8.8 earthquake in February of 2010 that caused a tsunami that went across the Pacific Ocean. Even, I think, today, the same area was hit by an aftershock of 6.2.
Yeah.
Then you go over to the other quadrant, the southwest quadrant, where New Zealand and Australia and Indonesia is, and you have the quakes that continue to hit Christchurch and unravel that region of North Island. Significant quakes. You then move to March 20, and that happened in September. The first one happened in September, and then there were some later ones. September 2010. You go up in March of 2011, and you have the 9.0 Tohoku quake and tsunami, again, a tsunami going across the entire Pacific Ocean. But here we are on the West Coast, on the northeastern quadrant of the Pacific Ring of Fire, where all the most seismic activity and volcanic activity happens. And Los Angeles, San Francisco, Seattle, Portland, Vancouver, British Columbia, all that area. We're overdue for something as significant as Tohoku, Chile, Christchurch. And I think that we will probably see it take place. The highest possibility of this happens when this significant square of Uranus with Pluto takes place in the summer, especially in the July and August period, especially around the new or full moon. The worst area astrologically that I sense is during the new and full moon September. We will probably see some major quake in the world, and my odds are it will be on the west coast of the United States or Mexico.
You might be right about that. I think you may be.
Yeah, and the area that concerns me more, San Francisco concerns me. Actually, Jim Berkland was on who you've had on the show,
yeah.
was in an interview for a Canadian documentary on prophecy that I did just a week or two ago in San Francisco. And he had been interviewed just before I was interviewed. And I told the producers my take on what was happening. I was surprised to hear that Jim also sees that from a totally different and more empirical discipline than mine. But we both, even though we come to this in very different ways, I'm very much more subjective, we both are sensitive to the cycles of the moon. And, you know, look what had just happened in Chile today. 6.2 earthquake. Guess what happened also today? New moon.
Oh, yeah. There is a correlation.
There is. And it's also very interesting what happened with Comet Lanen. When it was coming in, every time it lined up with the Earth and the Sun and its trajectory into the solar system, there was these three major eruptions of seismic activity that I just described in the Pacific Rim happened either right on the day or a little after. And if you look at hoaxprophecy.com, I have some studies there where you look at those quakes, and you also look at the greatest, most deadly quakes of the 20th and 21st century, and they all happen either on new moon, full moon, or 2 to 3 days before or after such. It's amazing how there's a correlation.
All right, John, stay with us. We're going to talk about December 21st and the possibility of war with Iran next. John Hoag has a number of ebooks available on his website, hoagprophecy.com, obviously linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Next hour, we'll take your phone calls with him as we talk about predictions for 2012 on Coast to Coast AM. John Hoag with us. John, why are we always interested in prophecy? Is it because we want you to be right or we want you to be wrong?
I think you want me to be rightly wrong.
Right on the good things, wrong on the bad.
Yeah, I personally, I always like it when I'm wrong about the bad stuff. And I've been right about the good stuff, too.
Yes, you have.
And of course, that depends on your opinion.
On what is good.
Yeah, some half the people hate what I think was a good thing, and the other half love it. So, and then they all change. I often say when people thank me for my predictions or they say how much they like them, I said, well, just hang in there. Sooner or later, I'm going to say, make a prediction, then all this love's going to, where did all this love go?
You know? That's right. Iran getting tough, threatening to shut down the Straits of Hormuz if the UAE continues to try to stop its oil shipments. What's going to happen there? What do you see?
Well, I've been collecting Nostradamus' prophecies about the a future war in the Strait of Hormuz. I actually put it together into a book called Nostradamus, The War with Iran, which I published in 2007 as an ebook, and you can also check that out at hoagprophecy.com, at least look at the overview page by clicking on my website. And there's amazing stuff there. The Arabian Gulf is what it was called in Nostradamus' time, not the Persian Gulf.
That's right.
There's actually a move to call it again the Arabian
Switch it
Gulf.
Back, yeah.
He also talks of Carmania, which I just did an article on the website, the article preceding the one that's up right now that you can also check out, which looks at a prophecy where he's describing the northern, what was the 16th century term, for the northern coast of the Strait of Hormuz, where all the Iranian naval bases are, where all the little flotilla of little boats and corvettes would come out to try to mine the Strait of Hormuz, where a third of oil is exported out of to the world through that very narrow area, which anybody who lived in San Pedro, California, like I once did, the Strait of Hormuz is about as wide as the Santa Catalina Strait. In some places, it's even tighter.
Can you see right across it?
Yeah.
Okay.
And also artillery, missile batteries, they don't have to, they could be in caves and roll out and shoot any ship that's going through it. So it's one of the tightest little necks of water around. Now, on the surface, there's been a lot of saber rattling, about as rattling as much as I would say a baby rattles, to keep people's attention away from other things that are really going on here. And I'm going to go on the record with this, that, you know, we have a situation, there are forces and industries that we don't much talk about, but I think coast to coast is a place where one can. The war market is in a bit of a recession right now in the Middle East. The very large military industrial complex that needs to have conflict so that people will buy weapons, or have at least a threat of conflict.
That's right.
So that people will buy weapons. What you see here is not going to be a war with Iran in 2012. The astrology that I see, and I put in the book, and also refresh again predictions for 2012, is it points to Nostradamus' astrology to 2015, 2016. Now, you have a lot of saber rattling. That was not done to as much to frighten Iran as it was to push the United States to make stronger sanctions, which in turn pushes Iran, what I call the Japanese ultimatum. This is what was thrown at Japan when it invaded Indonesia and continued to occupy China in 1940-41 by the United States, which was the place that most of Japan, the Imperial Japan's metal, steel products, and petroleum came from the United States. When the United States cut off that flow, it literally and I'm not defending the Imperial Empire of Japan at all, but what happens as consequence is that if you cut off especially a militarist empire's only source of energy, you force them to attack you. Pearl Harbor then happened.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. Everybody was expecting they would attack Indonesia first, because that's where the oil was, and the Dutch colonies were in disarray because Hitler had invaded and occupied Holland. So you have a situation that's a little reversed here. Rather than taking oil away from Iran, we're taking their ability to sell oil, mm-hmm. their only major resource.
And the economy right now is in shambles over there, I'm told.
And, you know, what I see actually happening this year are two things. The war market needs to create a arms buildup, and it is happening. I think in one of my blogs towards the end of the year, I predicted this Saudi Arabian arms deal, one of the biggest that the United States military-industrial complex has ever sent.
Khashoggi would have loved it.
Yeah. And so the rebuilding the Gulf states' air forces and armies, NATO is going, and France is going to move a naval base also near where the Fifth Fleet is in the Persian Gulf, so there'll be a NATO presence. Basically, the plan is you don't want to rush to a fast war if you need to keep your war market going. And the best way to keep a war market is to create a regional Cold War.
So they love these 10-year excursions, don't they?
Yeah, I mean, you create a situation of imminent threat, and then you stretch it out as long as possible. I mean, you don't go after bin Laden and wipe him out in Tora Bora. You wait 8 years.
You chase him around, yeah.
And then you have a president who actually wants to get him and gets him, you know, and that was not good for the war market, but it was good for humanity. But the problem then is that, so you're not going to have a war unless somebody makes a mistake and shoots at somebody. There might be an incident, some shots across a bow. But the thing that's more likely going to happen, I think, is a diplomatic breakthrough.
Well, let me give you this strange example, because, you know, I spend a lot of time in St. Louis now, obviously. Anheuser-Busch is there. And whenever Anheuser-Busch wanted to increase its market share, John, they would try to do the best they could with their existing products, but they always ended up having to create a new beer for a new market. Isn't that like war?
Yeah, it is.
Same thing.
Consumption. It's another form of consumption. It's infernal consumption, but it's consumption still. People need to consume new weapons and build new armaments to contain. I love how contain in military terms rhymes with sustain. And there's definitely a sustaining market when you have to contain for a generation a threat of Iran. Now, we were talking earlier about old countries that have been around a long time. The second oldest country that's been around as a national unit, basically, is Iran. It's been around for 3,000 years. Egypt was 5,000 years. It is 5,000 years. A culture that lasts that long is not the kind of culture that rushes into catastrophic warfare. And so it's the culture that finds a way to delay, to appease, to buy time. I think that the Iranian government will move towards a diplomatic solution. It's probably just to buy time.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I would simply say that the military-industrial complexes of the West that want to make something out of this thing with Iran are also buying time so they can build more weapons and sell them.
One day, though, that pressure cooker is going to explode.
Yeah, and that comes when you have Mars and Saturn equally fiery, according to Nostradamus. It means in the same fire sign. And that doesn't happen that often. And the next time that window happens, and if you follow when that aspect happens, a lot of the great wars in history or the great massacres and things happen mechanically during this kind of an aspect. Just like we were saying earlier, or maybe did not say in such detail, that when you have a square of Uranus a new moon or a full moon, and if Uranus or Mars are squared the Earth or the Sun at the same time, it's amazing how many times that causes either major volcanic eruptions or earthquakes. I would like to interject quickly, though, that I think you're going to see in the seismic world in 2012 more volcanic eruptions as significant in 2012 than earthquakes. But so that's just something I wanted to throw
and
in.
That's not good for the environment.
No, I don't know if it's going to be a Pinatubo effect. Certainly, if it was a Pinatubo effect, it would slow down global warming maybe 3 or 4 years. But then the sulfur that would be spewed into the atmosphere would, once the filtering of the sun had faded and filtered out of the atmosphere, would do what happened with Pinatubo. When Pinatubo exploded in the early 90s, I was writing that, yes, you're going to think that global warming has ended, and everything's going to get a little colder for a few years, but wait till 1998, I said in 1994. In 1998, you will see a spike in global warming that won't quit, and that's exactly what happened.
John, December 20... I'm sorry, go ahead.
Right. So the period when war, I think, would happen with Iran, when Obama in his second term has exhausted all diplomatic patience, when the Arabs in the Gulf would also be a part of the attack, when Saudi Arabia might even look the other way. In fact, currently Saudi Arabian and Israeli radar people are working to coordinate the possibility of an Israeli strike going over Saudi airspace. There's, I think, this month or next, a major maneuver, biggest yet, where American forces up to 5,000 participating are going to participate with Israeli forces so that they can get their lines of communication, radar understanding in harmony, all in preparation for one of two things: scaring Iran more to make a concession, but equally at the same time preparing for the eventuality of coordinating a multinational strike on Iran in 2015 or 2016.
All right. We will watch those dates. Of course, you'll be on the air with me then, too.
One would hope.
All right. December 21st, 2012. X-flares, solar flares, nothing. What's going to happen?
Well, you know, the solar flares, there is a real present danger with our vulnerable electricity or our grid.
Oh, yeah.
World. It's a very major thing. If we had the 1857 solar flare, which caused telegraph wires to arc, and people on the tappers to get electrocuted and burnt. If that kind of a solar flare hit, we would definitely see some major disruptions of the society. What's good news is that there's actually Homeland Security has very quietly and steadily been kind of pulling a Y2K on us, that is, fixing the problem. There's a lot of these smaller generators that are being stockpiled and prepared so that if the older systems that take a long time to build get fried out by the impulse of radiation from the sun, that there will be some backups. So I'm happy to report something positive about that. Well, of course, a diplomatic breakthrough with Iran would be positive too. It would stop killing people. The other thing. You know, the solar maximum is not going to happen in 2012. I know there's been a lot of 2012ers, I call them. These people have made a career on the 2012 phenomenon.
What are they going to do when 2012 comes and goes?
Well,
what's out there next?
Well, it's. I've seen this. I've been in this business a long time. I'm one of the longest lasting interpreters of my generation.
Yeah,
I started
true.
Doing this stuff in the early 80s, and I think
you've done it longer than Edgar Cayce.
Well, I don't know. I haven't sat on my couch and done 14,000 trance readings. So
yeah, but you've been doing this for 21 years, 30 years.
Yeah, I've been doing it a while, and I've seen a lot of fads come and go, and I've seen
years.
A lot of people do their 2,000 books, and Jose Arguelles make a whole other mythology out of 2012 that wasn't really in the prophecies, but, you know, and they come and they go, and I'm still here. And I'll probably still be around to see the solar maximum in 2013. That's the year, I think, that is to look out for some power grid issues, not this year. We'll just have some nice light shows, I think, and maybe something, the worst I could foresee would be something like what happened in Quebec a decade or
so
ago.
And you don't think anything's going to happen on that day, do you?
Well, you know, I was trying to think of a little story I could tell about that because, of course, we've bounced back and forth about this. I even have a passage about you in the new book.
Oh, you do? Okay.
Yeah, we're talking about basically, you know, what am I going to be doing on 2012?
You know where you're going to be.
I'm going to be I'm going to be sitting here with my old landline telephone, AT&T telephone, which still has that great sound.
It's Friday night.
We'll I'm going to be kicking back on and looking at all the LED lights that I have strung around in this place. It makes it look like Scotty's engine room. I'm going to be looking out if there's won't be any much light to look at, but if the Aurora Borealis is going crazy because of solar flare, I might be able to see the trees in the southern end of the property. But anyway, I'm going to be here talking about three things. One will be a yod, an orb, and a hat. And the yod is this very rare Y positioning thing that happens in astrology. And I'm not going to go into this is real. This is like algebra astrology here. It's pretty complicated. But what it means is it's called the finger of God. Or as I have illustrated in my book, I have Dan Rohn and Dean Martin with the fickle finger of fate.
I remember that one.
You know, with the little wings on the index finger.
Yep.
Yes. And they're presenting the award. And it is called the finger of God, or I would like to call it the fickle finger of fate. And it's where people are going to have this tremendous desire to change and look at new things, but they're going to be blocked. And they won't really know how to articulate it. That's one thing that's happening. So we're having a yod. The other thing we're having is an orb. Now, this is something I created unique to Hogue. Prophecy.com and kind of a collision of two disciplines. But my oracle wanted this to happen, so I will just simply state that an orb in astrology is the amount of influence that an aspect has. And what that means is that, you know, if the sun usually has an orb of 10 degrees either way. So if you've got planets that are lined up in the 20 degrees or 60 degrees or 90 degrees, you have some influence on the trine, which is a positive aspect, square, an opposition, etc., or a conjunction, which is where two planets are on top of each other or lined up with each other. So in layman's terms, it means that there's this influence in a planet. The 2012 thing is very interesting theory because, for one thing, the Mayans never saw this year. This year is not important in the Mayan calendar. This year is off by 13 years. JPL Laboratories, when they look at the exact lineup of the galactic center with the Earth and the Sun on the solstice, the solstice where that happened was between this winter solstice of 1998 and 1999. Now, I also have to say categorically that the people that have tried to pull up this fraudulent book called The Lost Book of Nostradamus it's not written by Nostradamus. He couldn't draw. And the pictures are a very poor copy of Cathar, mystical, symbolic, anti-papist pictures from several hundred years before Nostradamus' existence. So it's
a fraud.
But based on that, they've made this. A lot of these people in the 2012er market have made written whole books about and created whole seminar situations about this lineup that's supposed to happen when the arrow of constellation Sagittarius points exactly at the coal sack where the galactic center is. Now, that coal sack, we were talking earlier about how long it takes for the sun to slowly...
Hold on for a second, John. We'll come right back to that.